Today, 15 years of no real income growth. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, well, the latest post covering finance and property news. I highlighted last week the arcane discussion in the Senate estimates recently about measuring earnings growth across the Australian economy. Senator Canavan suggested that there was some gaslighting going on as the RBA pivoted away from the so-called wage price index to a measure which includes people shifting jobs, reported in the national accounts as average earnings. The latter is indeed a broader measure of labour earnings because it includes changes in bonuses, overtime and other payments, as well as the impact of workers transitioning to jobs with different levels of pay. According to the RBA in their recent statement on monetary policy, growth in the ANEMA has also been bolstered in the September quarter by the scheduled increase in the superannuation guarantee from 11.5% to 12% from July 2025. But of course, people don't see any of that in their real pay. Of course, it's a matter of debate, really. Outlook Economics Director Paul Downs, as quoted in the AFR, said, "A broader measure of pay, including occupational change, promotions, bonuses and superannuation, showed a 5.4% nominal increase through the year to September, or 2.3% in real terms in the national accounts." So, he says, if anyone tells you that real wages are going backwards on the basis of the WPI numbers today, which I'm sure many market economists and commentators will, then they really haven't dug very deeply into the numbers. Well, it's a matter of perspective, I say. But I have to tell you that I think this before tax and include everything but the kitchen sink measure belies the real experience of households who are indeed seeing their disposable income dropping. And that puts many households in a worse position than 15 years ago in real terms, once we adjust for inflation, and just don't mention the taxes either. And indeed, today we got the wage price index from the ABS to December 2025. They said quarterly wage growth of 0.8% was in line with the September quarter 2025, and annual growth in wages was 3.4%, up from 3.3% in the September quarter 2025. While both the private and public sector wages rose 0.8% in the quarter, on an annual basis, public sector wages grew at a faster pace than the private sector for the fourth consecutive quarter. Annual public sector wage growth was 4% in the year to December 2025, higher than the 2.8% at the same time last year, and private sector wages rose 3.4% over the same period. That was higher than the 3.3% growth recorded in the year to December 2024. The strong growth in public sector wages for 2025 was due to new state public sector agreements that delivered multiple pay rises over the course of the year. And it's also worth noting that looking at the public sector wage growth, the bulk of it is coming not from Commonwealth or local government, but from state government. Perhaps no surprise there, because of course when we talk about total government expenditure, we need to also consider what local governments, state governments, as well as Commonwealth governments are doing. And in fact, the states are where a lot of the issues actually bubbling along at the moment. And by the way, a third of all wages growth in the fourth quarter came from healthcare and education sectors. Yes, sectors that directly or indirectly paid for by the government. It's also worth noting that there are considerable state variations when it comes to the wage price index. New South Wales recorded the strongest quarterly growth at 1%. Victoria was just 0.6%. The ACT, though, recorded the lowest quarterly growth at 0.3%. In annual terms, Western Australia recorded the highest growth at 4.1%, while the Northern Territory recorded the lowest annual growth at 2.2%. So where you are in the country does matter. SpinGin came out with workers are earning much higher nominal wages now than they were a few years ago. and that's thanks to the progress Australians have made together on the economy. And he said, we've made a lot of progress together on the economy, but the job's not done because inflation is too high and people are still under pressure. That's why inflation, productivity and global uncertainty will be the big focuses of the budget. New data, he said, shows annual wages have grown about 3% for 14 quarters in a row. This is the longest streak of growth above 3% in over a decade and a half. But Jim, it's nonsense to highlight nominal wage growth and ignore real wages growth. In other words, after inflation, a before inflation view is frankly meaningless. The truth is, as Shane Oliver over at AMP highlighted, the real wages growth tipped back into negative territory in the December quarter, because December quarter wages at 3.4% is to be compared with the CPI at 3.6% year over year. Now he says, based on our forecasts, the real wages won't return to their 2020 level until around 2032. And Adam Crichton commented that real wages fell for the first time in 2 years, but imagine how they look if the CPI actually included the price of housing. Luckily for government, dwelling prices are not included. It's what's happening when inflation is too high and productivity growth is too low. The coalition immediately attacked Labour, with opposition employment spokeswoman Jane Hume blaming the government for the fall in real wages. This is what happens when a government ignores productivity and has no plan to tame inflation and strengthen the economy, she said. All of this actually validates the RBA's concerns about the economy, and the wages growth release was in line with the forecasts from economists. So the result was unlikely to change the central bank's judgment that the labour market is indeed too tight. The central bank expects nominal wage growth to be 3.1% annually over the next 2 years, which is higher than it thought at its last forecasting round due to ongoing demand pressures in the labour market, although this will not outpace inflation until at least June next year. And finally, I want to reinforce the problem of income distribution here, because the truth is that about one third of households in my surveys have indeed seen significant real income growth in recent years, but a third have seen no improvement at all, and the last third a significant drop in real terms, especially then if you take into account the higher tax take that many lower income households are now paying. Now, some of those households with bigger incomes do have more tricks up their sleeves to reduce their tax bills. So all of this highlights the pressures on household budgets and the apparent unwillingness of politicians to accept the reality which is staring many real households in the face. The economy is not built to benefit them, but the few percent. And this is unlikely to change given the current political mess that we are in. Indeed, unless we can find a way of improving real productivity, and that doesn't mean throwing more government money to create more public sector jobs, in my view, we need the private sector to really start firing. That means that we need to change a lot of settings, which would go right in the face of what Jim and Albo have been doing over the last few years. And meantime, ordinary Australians remain caught in the crossfire. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.